Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey everybody, welcome, and thank you for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. My name is Zach Brittle, I'm here with Laura Heck. Today we're here with Matt Frey, who is one of the coolest guys we've talked to in a really long time. He is the author of a book called This Is How Your Marriage Ends, but he's also just really, really thoughtful about how to lean into relationships with the soft skills that are needed around empathy and compassion. He goes into that quite a bit. We really love talking to him. We will also celebrate one of our listeners, Edna, who has written in and asked some questions for Matt, and also who is one of our donors to Laura's fundraiser for Holden. If that's your jam, go ahead and donate on our page, marriagetherapyradio.com. But for now, I hope you'll really just take in what Matthew has to offer. We sure did. This is a very cool conversation. Stick around.
You know what I see in the background?
What do you see?
I see Terry Real's book.
Yeah.
And I see Susan Johnson's book.
I have, I've been doing this like 10 or 11 years, just, you know, amateurly. And what I was consistently hearing at the beginning was that what I was writing was sort of like the, I don't know how to say it without being like exceedingly self-deprecating, but sort of like the dumb guy version of Terry Real's work. It was like
the approachable
like
everyman version.
Yeah.
Like
the everyman. There you go.
Yeah. And, you know, and I was like, okay. And yeah, I looked into it. He's a great guy. I've ended up befriending a couple of people who have like trained with him. Cool. And so I do think we just sort of like accidentally landed on the same things. But again, Terry, like you guys, from a much more sort of academic and intelligent perspective, and me more from the bumbling guy who got divorced perspective.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's kind of the podcast, though. I was reading you're not a bumbling guy, by the way. but I do think it's really important to take complex content that maybe, you know, academics might read in a book and dumb it down, if you will, and just make it more approachable. And that's 100% where Zach and I are coming from. That's the whole point of the podcast. We call it infotainment. Like we'll sprinkle in some entertainment. Every once in a while, we'll get something really smart, you know, like Matthew comes on our podcast and shares his wisdom, and then we get the info part, but the rest of it's entertainment.
No, I appreciate that. That is the positive feedback I've gotten over the years, is that Matt, the way you're saying it is the way that I've finally been able to hear it, where yeah. That my husband, I often am hearing from female partners and heterosexual relationships that are saying,
yeah,
Matt, thank you for saying it a way that I can finally like gift this to my husband, because the way that I'm doing it has thus far like fallen on deaf ears. I also would like to acknowledge how offensive that is for all of the people out there, mostly women, who have been fighting to be heard and seen for a long time, and it takes some divorced guy to accomplish it. I do feel a sense of shame about that as well.
Yeah. I just spent last week in Costa Rica with Terry, and he's a good dude. And I think that it's true that you do have a way of articulating what he's saying, which is basically like prioritize relationality. Like that's basically the bottom line of his thesis.
But I was listening to your recent podcast episode with Melissa Orloff this morning. And she, I, if you don't know or can't tell, am like one of the ADHDers that she's talking about. And it, she really was also, I think, articulating in a very cogent, intelligent way the ideas that I try to do in that simplified way. It's so interesting. And yeah. I don't think that neurodiversity has to apply. I think that the idea that we're all us, and it's very difficult sometimes to step out of us to think about the experiences of someone who's not us, is a really, really simple concept, I think, particularly for people who are really empathetic and mindful in the relationship space, but exceedingly difficult for everyday people who think they have like a default do no harm policy, and they're unaware that things they do and say or don't do and say can result in pain for somebody else. And I really feel like that kind of sums up human relationships, romantic or otherwise, in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Well, we hit the ground running, which is amazing. We'd love to do that.
Yeah,
I just hit record, we capture everything. But I wanted to kind of tee this up with two things. First of all, you're Matthew Frey. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Do you, we get to call you Matt. Is that a thing that happens?
Or please,
do you
like Matthew? I am mostly Matt. Yes, sir.
Right on. We polled our audience. We were like, hey, we're trying to get some cool interviews. I wonder who you want to talk to. Your name came up more than anyone else's, which was interesting to me. It was like,
it's really flattering to hear.
So I was like, I got to find out how to talk to this guy. And you may know that we are a certified Gottman therapist. John Gottman wrote a book famously called Seven Principles for Making Marriage Work. In the first couple of chapters, he sort of notes how he can predict divorce. So in some ways, he sort of buries the lead there. Like, it's mm-hmm. like, here's how to make it work. But oh, by the way, here's how you can ruin it. You don't bury the lead. You go straight to it. Your book is called This Is How Your Marriage Ends. And so I am delighted and excited to hear from you, because I think you're right. People do want to know that every time they come into our office. I don't know, Laura, if you hear this too, they're like, so can you tell us if we're going to make it? Or can you predict mm-hmm. right now? And I'm like, we'll take some time, but I'm excited to just talk to you and pick your brain a little bit and hear about how you got where you are and how the book happened and what you've learned since then. Cause I know you're working on a new one. So, by way of introduction, welcome, Matt. And, we're looking forward to chatting with you.
Thank you very much. I'm really delighted to be here.
That was an amazing tee up, but I want to hear a little bit about the background as to like, why did you write the book? Where'd the book come from? I want to know about your personal experience of why you started writing.
Yeah, no, happy to share it. On April 1st, coming up here in about a month, as of this recording, will be that my wife left on April 1st, 2013. I'll just never forget it. And I just took it really hard. And I'm sure you guys have heard every story possible, maybe even had your own individual relationships back in the day that didn't make it. And
Is it time though, Matt, to make the, is this a joke moment that you had at that time on April 1st? Because like, it was April Fool's Day.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, it's funny. No, I think about it. And I've used the line that, you know, it wasn't an April Fool's joke. Yeah. She meant that. And she drove away with, at the time, our son was four, almost five. And so in terms of like symmetry, my parents divorced when I was four, almost five.
Okay.
Wow.
And that the genesis of my sort of like relationship with divorce and marriage mm-hmm. stems from me being the four-year-old, like waving goodbye to my father. 500 miles away is like my mom. Back in like the early 80s, mm-hmm. you could just like move away from the other parent. And I, you know, that was like a challenge as a kid. And then it was so much worse as a father mm-hmm. and as like a husband, feeling a little bit scorned and a little bit betrayed and a little bit abandoned, like when it happened. Mm-hmm. And so I just had never felt anything uglier and more painful than that. I was, I'm about to be 45. I guess I was 33. And so in 33 years, I'd never like known something sort of like as dark and ugly. And so in the interest of sort of self-preservation, I said, okay, what is it that I can do to protect myself and my son from having something like this happen again? Wow. And that was, so it started as a really selfish exercise. And in my work, which was predominantly just like spewing, like emoting to the internet, like on a blog that I started. That's where it all started. I just started having human conversations. That's where I was hearing, hey, Matt, you're saying the things Terry Real says in this like super smart way. And just piece by piece, week by week, month by month, I was getting more insight into wow. And then I landed finally on the idea that I think is really, really important for a lot of people. And if we're going to get super specific, often men. And in all relationships, but again, most commonly in heterosexual relationships is where these dynamics play out. That might just be a math thing. Because the dynamics exist in all relationships, even non-romantic ones. But the idea is that good people, really good, well-intentioned, really smart people, can be not so great relationship partners. And that doesn't seem like this like mind-bending idea to me, but it never been presented. I'd always wrapped up in my belief system this notion that because I'm a decent person, because I perceive myself to be of good character and genuinely, you know, loving these people and willing to like sacrifice for them, speaking of my wife and my son, like I should be measured as, evaluated as like a good guy, a good husband. And instead I had to like detach the two ideas that just like I could not be a good pilot or good at building bridges that, you know, don't collapse into the river. I can also fall short of executing husbandry at a high level. And once I got to that point and I realized I don't have to be defensive, like I don't have to like protect like my ego and my self-interest so much, I can still be a quality human being and have fallen short of some of the behaviors that would have resulted in, I think, just healthy, good partnership. Anyway, I told you it started as a selfish exercise. I began to piece together the story of the marriage through my wife's perspective, as I realized how common behaviors like mine resulted in. And it was mostly anecdotal, but it's anecdotal from tens of thousands of people. And I know that's confirmation bias, but you believe it when you hear the same story. And I'm sure that you both do in terms of the clients that come in and you talk about the patterns. I even in my short time doing relationship coaching, 5 or 6 years, all of the stories have this, even if the details differ, the themes are almost always the exact same. And that was my story. And I think Melissa Orloff said it in her episode with you, this notion of, you know, did you have a camera in our kitchen? Were you listening in? You both have heard that before, probably too. Like, Matt, I'm reading your book and you're writing my story. And that's what they were saying about the blog before the book. So anyway, that's how I got started. I started writing a book. I sort of inadvertently landed on a conclusion that I think resonates with a lot of people, air quotes, like me. And so somewhere along the way, somebody said, hey, Matt, what about coaching? And I fought that for a couple of years. But finally, I relented and said yes. And that led to everything that's happening now.
Amazing.
Oh, man, I have so many questions. You already know this, but I sent you some questions from a gal, one of our listeners. Her name is Edna. And she said, oh my God, I read your book and it's exactly my story. You know, so there's confirmation bias right there. And she wanted to peel away all these questions about how do you do and what do you do? And
can I say something about Edna really fast before you go on?
Yeah.
By the way, Edna donated to the Children's Tumor Foundation.
There you go.
So when you just said her name, I was like, here, I just need a shout out to Edna because I know that name and I've corresponded with Edna and thank you for your donation.
Like Edna.
Continue.
Laura's son, like Edna. If you haven't caught this yet, he has a rare tumor situation called, what is it called?
It's called NF2. So NF2, tumors that...
It's become our pet project to raise money for the year, ostensibly to help Laura run a marathon, but also to raise money for research. So
anyway,
that's a side note.
This is the way the ADHD works, right? Like we go off on tangents and then Zach brings me back. Okay, go on.
Just because you've mentioned it a couple of times, I'm interested to know what you think or how you connect the dots between your work and Terry Real's work. He's been a guy that I've been investing in a lot more. And so as you lay that down, what are the things that you go, oh, this, like, for example, this, or for example, that would be interesting for me to hear in terms of how you understand it.
I would have to be able to articulate Terry's work, I think, with more precision to answer your question.
Yeah.
But in a more general way, I would say, I think Terry focuses a lot on concepts around like patriarchal society and masculine feminine energy, which doesn't always show up as like the man doing this thing to the woman. But I think in general, and I hope I'm not misinterpreting or misspeaking, and please correct me if you believe that I am, about Terry's work, but this notion that in male-female relationships or masculine-feminine relationships of any kind, there is a dearth, an absence of soft skills, of concepts like compassion, empathy, validation, just really, really useful, the human-like skills that a lot of young women are taught organically as part of their upbringing, or for survival social skills, they like learn them in order to just like exist in school and in peer groups. And so many boys are frankly just not taught these things, or even discouraged in effort to, you know, like, I don't know, be a man. And some of these, you know, semi-toxic messages, like sort of application specific, I guess. Yeah. But in the context of human relationships, I think the most critical being marriage or long-term partnership and parent-child relationships, that men are deprived lessons that would be very useful in like nurturing and showing up effectively in those. And then there's like, you know, a lot of like shame and anger around it today. Always maybe, but certainly today, like in various men's circles. And I don't love a lot of the toxic messages coming out of a lot of like super men oriented groups these days. And I don't have much love for them at all. And I don't think they like me either, but I do feel organic sympathy for the idea that they were denied as I was. I just was blessed with a lot of exceedingly loving family and friends growing up. So it like sort of helped offset a lot of it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's dig in. I want to know, I was really interested in the idea that there are some specific behaviors that you may not even be aware are actually kind of eroding away at your relationship. What can some of those behaviors be? Like, I would love to just hear just what are you seeing? And what are you hearing are consistent behaviors that are unhealthy, unhelpful, and contributing to divorce?
In my coaching work, I pair like almost all human behavior down to two ideas. I'm often working with men, and I'm often trying to sell them on the idea that they have a lifetime of habits. And I don't know if like neuroscientifically to the letter of the law, what we do day in and day out as routine is necessarily a habit. But I think it's a useful model for thinking about, I just do things on autopilot.
Right.
Some percentage of those things result in negative experiences for my relationship partner. Yeah. And so I just think that's the default setting of human beings, and that any two diverse people you put in the same space, most of the time, you're going to sort of accidentally step on one another's toes in this way. And so the two ideas are A, validation. And so I lead in my coaching work with this idea that, and I think the simple way that I try to characterize it is we must be able to have successful conversations. Mm-hmm. One partner must be able to go to the other and say, hey, I hurt because of X, Y, and Z conditions. Or when you say or do these things, you know, like something bad happens to me. I like to map the concept of pain onto it because I think it's very useful. I think some people may quibble with that, but I do believe over time this idea hurts. And the way that I characterize that I want to encourage people to think about validation are these three like really, really common scenarios in which we invalidate people. And I think the invalidator frequently just thinks of it as an adult disagreement, which people have all the time. And there's nothing immoral or inherently wrong with it. But it will erode trust in relationships if your partner can't trust you to say, hey, something's wrong for me. And if they don't get feedback or a response that they experience as love and care, it starts to whittle away at a trust in a relationship. Yeah. And so the three ways I think we consistently invalidate people is we don't think the same thing they think. We just believe something different. And then we have some sort of debate about it. And I think the unintended consequence is what I think is superior than what you think. I think the really ugly way to think about it is if I think something different than what you think and I'm going to fight you on it, I'm implying that you're wrong, that you're stupid, or that you're crazy. Every time your brain and my brain arrive at a different conclusion. The second thing is the emotional inverse. It's like the emotional experience we have, the feelings we have essentially. Your reaction, your emotional, physiological reaction to that event happening is different than mine. And I think mine is superior to yours. Mm-hmm. And I think the unintended consequence is when your feelings come into conflict with what I feel, I choose me over you. And the ugly version is you're weak, you're hypersensitive, you're overreacting, you need to grow up, toughen up, something like that. Some implication that when I don't think or feel the things that you think or feel, I'm going to imply that you're wrong or broken or need fixed on some level, and that I choose my thoughts and feelings over yours. I think this is the unintended consequence of these little everyday conversations, these really benign, mm-hmm. Things like on the surface that seem so silly. And then the third one is defensiveness. And it happens all the time with well-intentioned people. This idea of, I meant no harm. How could you interpret me that way? Mm-hmm. And defensiveness, to me, I think, boils down to this idea that I choose me over you. You come to me to communicate a problem, something bad that happened to you. I'm either somebody who hurts you on purpose and already knew about it, which means you probably shouldn't be in a relationship with me, or I'm a good person. And I'm fundamentally unaware that what I just did or didn't do resulted in some measure of pain for you. And what I tell like every client that I work with today is, I wish I'd been the kind of person that expressed gratitude to my wife for pointing out when something was upsetting or saddening or scaring her on some level or whatever, because if I truly profess to be somebody who loves you, and I truly profess to be somebody that is not intentionally harming you, shouldn't I be grateful for insight into like some scenario that I never even occurred to me? Mm-hmm. But instead, I'd get so angry with her for like always finding something new to complain about. Right. The refrain of virtually everybody I talk to, because again, most of the guys are so much like me, it's terrifying. Yeah. I just thought I should be given all of this credit for, all of these sacrifices and all of these so-called good things that I was doing over the years. I never took any responsibility for the idea that my wife could hurt because of things I wasn't paying enough attention to. Anyway, so super long answer. The first idea, the fail-safe is validation. We're going to spend our whole lives accidentally hurting or inconveniencing people because we're human and not psychic.
Yeah.
The work is, if I choose to have a healthy relationship with you, you can trust me to pay attention and to repair scenarios in which like I wasn't aware. And it starts to me with verbal communication. I just can't think of a more efficient way. The second umbrella of behavior that I boil things down to is mindful consideration of other people's experiences. And, you said, what are those things? I mean, that can manifest as everything. That can manifest as the toilet seeping left up or the dish by the sink or me consistently being 3 minutes, 4 minutes later than I said I was going to be. The tone of voice I use at a dinner table when I'm sort of mocking you in front of our friends or in front of your family at Sunday dinner or whatever. There's just an endless string of scenarios in which a different person feels something akin to, if not outright pain, as a result of something I'm doing, saying, or not doing or not saying. And our inability, our inability to recognize, honor, and like repair those little sort of like micro transgressions that exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just think is the genesis of most trust erosion, which sort of begets people falling out of love, if you will, with one another.
I want to jump into this idea of mindful consideration, because if we look at the sort of qualitative information that we're taking from our clients and what they're saying, I am seeing a massive difference in genders where females are saying, I think about you all the time. There isn't a moment that I don't wake up and think, boy, I should probably pull the covers back over my husband because I just pulled him off and he's cold. Or I need to, grind the coffee beans in the garage because I don't want to wake you up. And it's like, I hear from women all the time saying, this is ingrained in me. I think about you all the time. Why is this not second nature for you as the man or the masculine energy in the relationship? And I'm wondering if you're butting up against that too, or if you have some suggestions as to why it may not be something that is ingrained culturally or taught for men, particularly to be mindfully thoughtful of other human beings in their surroundings. Because I see a massive difference.
Yeah, I don't profess to be able to explain the genesis of an absence of consideration for other people, but the way that I talk about it in my work, and you summed it up so perfectly, so I'm just essentially repeating in my own silly way the thing that you said, but I always describe it as like this really basic algebra equation. And so I'm talking to guys, and I apologize for anybody who can't see me because I'm like holding up my hand to like represent a math variable like X, if you remember, like just algebra one in high school. But the most common woman I encounter in my work is statistically a married mother of two. And she says, Matt, I'm a person. I'm an individual. I'm a variable. In the math equation, I used to make decisions. I want things. I need things. And then I go do something about it. I take some action. It can be really small, right? I'm thirsty. I get a drink. I'm cold. I get a blanket. My hair's starting to look like unkempt. I'm going to schedule an appointment. I want or I need something. I go do it. It's like the default setting of mammals, like always. And then she says, but I'm not the only variable in my life. I have a husband. He's an additional, totally separate variable, the value of which is different than mine. Made up of like different things, different wants, different needs. Each of my children are as well, right? So you got this family of four, and mom is saying, I think about me, and I think about my husband, and I think about each of my children, and I account for all of us, and to the best of my ability, precisely calculate for all of us in order to make choices about what to do this weekend, about what food to get at the store, about what gifts to buy, plans to make, all things. I'm factoring in all the people, exactly what you just said about grinding coffee beans away from a sleeping person or covering them back up. This idea that I think about their experiences and that those experiences factor in to what I choose because it's how I should love and care for the people that matter to me. And then the observation and or experience that this woman's having is that she's married to somebody who doesn't do that, whose default setting is to be the only variable consistently in like his decision making. And so he wants or he needs something, he goes and he does it, often with seemingly no regard to how she and or the family will feel about it. And so after 10, 15, 20, 25 years together, the conclusion is one of the following two things. I'm married to somebody who knows me inside and out, understands my wants and my needs.
Yeah.
Doesn't really care and just does what he wants anyway. Essentially, sort of neglectfully hurts me on purpose because I'm too much of an inconvenience. He doesn't care. Mm-hmm. The other thing that can be true is by the way, I think this is the answer most of the time, is I'm married to somebody who just doesn't really like think about me at all. Like he goes about his day blind or sort of absent of awareness that I'm impacted or others are impacted by the things I'm doing or not doing. And that too, after 10, 15, 20 years, is a really sad story because she's often saying, I feel that small, that invisible, that unimportant, that sort of left behind in the marriage. Mm-hmm. And I understand that story, and that's the story I'm telling to like everybody I'm talking to, and I'm saying, and you can usually meet, and I'm really trying to like connect with them this idea that the sum of your actions, habitually on autopilot, inadvertently results in the person you profess to love the most believing that they're of little significance to you, and the work, as I see it, both under the umbrella of consideration and under the umbrella of validation, becomes mindful, habitual change, choosing to show up differently. And every day, can I leave in my wake a trail of evidence that communicates, I do think about you. You matter to me, and I evaluate like your experiences and try to like adjust what I'm doing accordingly. And if I make a mistake or I'm not thinking about it, which is really likely because I'm a human being who's not you, can I at the very least allow you to come to me and communicate that there was some pain or some negative experience? And can you walk away from that conversation feeling like I heard, you know, like I genuinely care that something bad happens to you. I can't fathom that I spent 13 years in my previous relationship inadvertently communicating to my wife, if I don't hurt too, I don't really care. I didn't say things like that. I didn't even feel things like that. But it is the math result of the conversation I was always having. I never said, gee, I'm as interested in you not hurting as you are. And you absolutely should be able to trust me to not do things that hurt you. I have no idea why I didn't bring that to these conversations. I was too busy trying to, I guess, protect my ego. There's therapeutic things here I don't fully understand, and I don't wade in those waters too deeply.
I want to talk about habits because, first of all, the whole validation umbrella, we could spend hours on it. It is one of my absolute favorite topics to discuss. And I just am nodding right along with you as you're talking about it. But I'm also thinking about the listener that's probably saying, yeah, I don't mindfully think about my partner on a daily basis. And I'm not really sure if I have habits that are reinforcing the idea that I care about you, I think about you. It reminds me of, so I did a talk at Google I had a room full of engineers, about 150 engineers. They're all men.
Yeah.
And no, it was great. I just didn't have any eye contact the entire time.
They were all looking at their phones. I just meet them one at a time. I can't imagine 150.
Yeah. And at one point I thought, I don't have anybody's eye contact. I have no idea whether or not what I'm saying is connecting with this audience of men and male engineers. And then all of a sudden I said, you know, what would be really helpful, guys, is if you were to be able to check in with your partner on a daily basis and just send them a text and say, I'm thinking about you. I care about you. How's your day going? Whatever it might be. And I said, you know what? That's hard to remember in the middle of your day when you're working and you're grinding. Why don't you set an alarm on your phone for like 1:23 PM and every day at 1:23, you send a text to your partner. And it just is a unique text every day that I'm thinking about you. How's your day? What's going on? Can I get anything on the way home? But it was reinforcing a habit for them to be able to reach out to their partner and say, I care about you. I'm thinking about you. I hold you in my heart and in my mind. And that was the moment where all of a sudden everybody connected with that, because what I was doing was I was giving them a habit to do that had a trigger. So they set an alarm on their phone, and I got a lot of feedback that was the most interesting part of my entire talk. But I was thinking about you creating habits of like, how do you work with men in particular of being able to instill some new habits of mindfully holding their partner in their heart?
When I talk about consideration, I tell them I hold up this like sign and it says consideration across the top. And then there's sort of two branches, two legs coming off of it. One side of it is the word inclusion. And the other side of it are the words solving for why. And so inclusion to me is like twofold. It's the mental habit of I include the variable that represents my wife in this like silly math equation. Like, yeah. I just include her. It's not just me equals me do a thing. It's me plus this human. And I'm not forgetting, like, to me, that's the mental habit, is I'm not forgetting to include my wife in my decision-making tree, so to speak. But there's also like a much more sort of like real world logistical thing. It turns out this idea of feeling excluded is more sort of like tangible than just this nuanced idea of I'm not thought about. It's like a lot of guys I encounter in my work will sort of unilaterally make some decisions about money or about anything. Yeah. I mean, one time it was like going to rescue one of their kids who was like on the side of a road at like 1:30 in the morning because of like a broken down car or something. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want to like wake his wife up. She was furious that right. She wasn't woken up. And he didn't understand that he was like trying to do a good thing. And I said, go talk to her and find out if what hurt was that you excluded her from something she felt she should have been a part of, or at least been aware of, that the, you know, your guy's most precious loved one was like in a semi-precarious state. And I understand why he was so defensive about it in that story and why he thought she was like picking on him. But I also understood that she, in her mind, he should know her well enough after X number of years of marriage that when one of their kids is in trouble, she wants to be clued in on it, not mm-hmm. be left to sleep blissfully unaware. Right. So anyway, I don't know what your take on like that is. but the other half, solving for why, is the nuanced idea of I could have 50 partners in my life. All of them will have a diverse set of human wants, human needs. I date somebody who's got a severe gluten allergy. Mm-hmm. She's the first person I've ever met with a really severe, it's to the letter of the scientific law, it's an allergy to sensitivity as science goes. But if she ingests wheat, she gets really sick. And mm-hmm. I bring this up a lot in my coaching sessions. It's become such a great model for benign substances, everyday substances, English muffins, bagels, loaves of bread, flour shell tortillas. And me learning to apply danger, toxicity, poison to these things that have been like ubiquitous in my life forever. Yeah. And I've never once thought of, other than like the carb situation, as being any sort of threat. And now I'm constantly, vigilantly, air quotes, protecting her from getting sick from like these substances. And what's great about it, like for me, is the amount of trust that gets built. because I'm constantly reminding her because you eat all the time. Like, you know what I mean? Like you eat like every day almost. And so, you know, let's see her half the days. And food's often involved and she's constantly seeing me, whether I'm preparing food or whether we're like out somewhere, advocating for her experience with it in a way she didn't experience in her previous marriage, in a way she doesn't experience from her mom, dad, siblings, at holiday get-togethers and stuff, which I experienced this past Christmas. And it's really interesting. And I tell that story because I really think that's the model. What emotionally nuanced thing in your life is invisible to you because it seems so silly, the idea that eating an English muffin could make you sick. It does seem silly until you're a person that will get sick from that. It seems silly that like eating snack peanuts would potentially kill you. But there are really some people out there who might die if they ingest a peanut. And the work, it's not, I'm not evil or dangerous because I have bread or because I have peanuts or because I would put them out for other people to potentially have. But how I behave when I discover that one of my guests or friends or whoever is a threat to get hurt or sick or die because of this thing that doesn't impact me, I just think conceptually that's what a dish by the sink, the toilet seat being left up, all these little random decisions that happen in a given day in a relationship boils down to things sort of as seemingly benign as that. And the work is, can I leave evidence that says, I see you, I think about you, I know you. Yeah. You can trust me to make decisions that account for not just my experiences, but yours. And that is what my wife couldn't trust me to do and what I hope I can demonstrate moving forward with all the people.
I love this whole discussion. I think your program sounds amazing. I wish I had it 15 years ago. I've fumbled my way into a healthy marriage at the moment. I've been married to Rebecca for 26 years. We've probably been married four or five different times, but you started answering questions that I really have, but we're going to be friends forever, you and me, Matt. So, but I wanted to know if you're dating now. Sounds like you are, but I'm also like really interested to know what's your relationship like with your ex-wife and your son? Like how's that going for you? Or what's been the aftermath of you coming into all this awareness 10 years later or five or six or whatever it was?
You know, I don't think that she knows the degree of work that I've done, to be fair. Her only experience with it would be her experiences with me. Yeah. Which I do think she probably would, you know, I don't quiz her on this stuff.
Yeah.
But I think she sees me. I know she didn't do that. She told me, she's like, man, I'm just letting you know, I'm not going to read it. Yeah. I'm like, okay. Like, you don't need to read it. It's just a big mea culpa, the whole thing, really. Yeah. And it's fine. She doesn't owe me anything. She's been with somebody for like 8 years.
Yeah.
They have like a new house. They just moved like, I don't know, 6 months ago, to this new place, and very happy for her. He's a really good dude we can trust with my son and with her wellness. And I really, that was a huge load off. One of the hardest parts of divorce early was like, I don't know about bad words, but like, holy shit. I have no agency over like who my son's around anymore. And if she wants to be with like some awful human who's going to mistreat her and or him, there's nothing I can do about it. That was a really scary idea and I should have trusted her a lot more. But guys, he's a rock solid human being.
Well, how could he not be? I mean, you seem so committed to soft skills for in general. And if you're passing that down at all, you're getting ahead of the curve already for this next generation of men that he's a part of. Right. So that's,
I hope so. My son is a good kid. He's going to turn 16 in June. He's a sophomore in high school. He's on the young side of being a sophomore in high school. But I don't know. He's great. But I'm really proud of my relationship with my ex-wife. We are exceedingly cooperative, and I think she would say I'm a reliable, trustworthy, considerate co-parent. In ways that she couldn't trust me to be in our marriage. She could not trust me. And I understand. And it's because of all the things I'm talking about. I'd leave a glass by the sink and then act like she was an asshole for being upset about it, even though we had 7,000 conversations around what that meant to her versus what it meant to me. It meant nothing to me. Yeah. I just didn't want to be mommed. I don't know if you remembered the Melissa Orloff conversation. She talks about like the parent-child dynamic that shows
totally.
Up. It very much shows up.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite parts of my book, and it originated as a blog post, was called, "She Feels Like Your Mom and Doesn't Want to Bang You." was like describing how sex dies because we inadvertently put our partner in a parental role by not accepting responsibility for various aspects of our lives. And that was certainly true in my marriage. I was fundamentally unreliable. And I don't think it's because I was a bad person or an idiot necessarily. I did not connect the dots around, you have to be able to trust me to honor your experiences in order for there to be the requisite amount of trust in a relationship. That idea was completely foreign to me. I thought she was being overreactive, sensitive, immature, things like that. When turns out I was those things.
You've got a new project in the works. So what are you working on now?
I'm working on, it's currently untitled, but yeah, I do have a second book in the works. The idea is, I don't want this to sound, this sounds exceedingly egocentric, and I don't want it to because I'm not this self-congratulatory. I don't think so highly of myself that I think I'm going to come up with some mega bestseller. But the pitch was, hey, Matt, you know how there's like so many teenagers get chicken soup for the teenage soul when they graduate high school? And I'm like, yes, I'm aware of that. I think I probably did too, even though I didn't read it. Yeah. And you're like, well, what if we came up with like that size, that sort of like giftish book length, that, I don't know, 200 page book that is for young people, probably men, like when they get engaged or when they're thinking about marriage, that sort of like pre-marriage manual, like, and essentially, I mean, let's just be honest. It will be, this is how your marriage ends, reformatted. With hopefully a series of interviews with a lot of people much younger than I am. I turn 45 next month. And I don't think I'm quite in touch with 20-year-olds like I might have been in the past. But I spoke to a couple recently, and I'm going to keep speaking to, when I say a couple, I mean two different 20-somethings. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to keep adding to the list 20-somethings, younger people, hopefully prior to long-term committed relationships. And I really want to seek to understand what they're thinking about, what they're looking for, what they're navigating in the dating space, and how their approach to marriage is. And can I marry that with what I think I've learned through my own experiences and you know, just stuff from the previous book? Anyway, hopefully I can come up with something that's useful. Hopefully I can come up with the book that would have been useful to me. Here's the hard
that's
truth.
That's always it.
Not sure I would have read it.
Yeah.
The hard truth, I don't think I would have read it.
100%.
I was like 22. I got married when I was engaged at 24, married at 25.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would have taken seriously like that book. But
no doubt.
Percentage of kids will.
I have been, this has been one of the major revelations of the last few years for me, which is I'm figuring out stuff now at 50 that I wish I had known at 20, 30, 40. And I'm like, if only I had known. And then I'm like, I think I probably did know. I think somebody told me. I think I read that book. I think I heard that from a mentor, and I just wasn't ready to listen or conform to the wisdom that I had to earn, you know?
I grew up in a small conservative town at Catholic school, and every guy I meet that grew up in small conservative towns that went to Catholic school or otherwise, you know, like just really, and I don't mean to denigrate conservatism or religion of any kind. There seems to be a correlation between boys raised like me and then how we showed up in marriage.
Sure.
And it's like I did.
I just wanted to say, like, I'm really impressed with, you're right, like the way that you have constructed the methodology or the concepts makes so much sense. And I want to be able to put men in particular, but at couples in your pathway. But part of me is like, they can read the book. That's great. You're doing coaching. Do you ever work with groups or speak to groups?
I have like a phobia around public speaking. So I've always avoided it. I've been invited to a bunch of things and turned it down.
I bet you have.
So chicken about it. I like much more comfortable in like a panel environment.
Yeah.
Where I'm not like the person just exposed on stage or behind the lectern, so to speak. But I aspire to, but if not now, when, you know, like if not now, when. So I'd like to very much. I'm open to virtual group environments, and the people that I'm working with on the second book are very interested in trying to construct some sort of like events. I think that's probably the most practical path to sustainable income in this space. frankly. You don't.
Yeah.
You don't make a killing writing books.
Yeah.
No. And I think
John Cotman.
Yeah.
I want to put you in front of as many people as possible. But if our listeners are interested in finding you, your website, is that a great place to send them to MatthewFrey.com?
I mean, I think that's the starting point, MatthewFrey.com. And okay. I started a little less than a year ago. I don't know if you're familiar with Substack, but it essentially operates like a blog / email newsletter. And, so we're there now. I am notoriously awful, at least have been for the past couple of years, I'm not creating consistent content right now, but it's a thing I'm trying to overcome in my personal life and get back to it. I'm learning that it turns out it's really easy to create content in this space when there's a lot of pain fueling it, which there was for the first, let's call it 5 to 7 years. For the last 3 or 4, pretty good. Like, I'm okay. Everything's okay. Yeah. And, the cost has been an absence of sort of what used to fuel me. And I hate that because I'm very much driven by this idea that I think I have something important to say I don't say it better than anybody else. There are just some people, it would seem, that hear it like my way. Like my way is the way they get the information.
Sure.
I do feel this moral obligation to put it out there for them. And they're not going to just find 7-year-old stuff floating on the internet. I need to make new things. So hopefully I will.
Well, you are an awfully humble human being. I do not have a humble bone in my body, and it's really refreshing.
It's true.
It's true. It's true. Okay. So you, Matthew Frey, you've got your books. They can check that out wherever you buy your books at your local bookstore. Check it out. This is How Your Marriage Ends. And what else can we do to help you out and support you?
Honestly, that's it. I want people to have healthy relationships, and I just don't care what their path is. I would only want people to work with me if I'm the thing that helps. And I don't profess to be all things to all people. Sometimes I'm just like kind of the right guy because it's often been described as like having a drink at the bar and having a relationship conversation. Like that's, and some people like that.
I get
some people want to sit at the bar and have a drink and talk relationships. That's what works for them. And
that's our vibe, actually. And I think our audience is going to connect really well with you. So I'm glad that we had you on and that we can give them you as a resource to check you out. Cause I think it's going to be a really great fit.
I really appreciate it. I don't profess to have anything to give above and beyond. classically learned, trained people such as yourselves and many other people. But I just sort of accidentally work for somebody, and I'm here for that.
Really glad to have you on.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for the opportunity. It was an absolute pleasure to meet you both. And I don't know how I could ever be useful to either of you, but I hope that you'll reach out if I ever can be.
Shall we land this plane?
Yeah, totally.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. Boy, we are on a roll. We have had some awesome guests. Thank you to Matthew Frey, who joined us. Again, his website's MatthewFrey.com. And if you're just wanting to have a little bit of just nice, awesome, kind, brilliant information, just maybe coming in, sign up for his newsletter. You can find the sign up on his website, MatthewFrey.com. Check out his book. It is 100% going to be on my Kindle here in about 2 seconds. Thanks for all of your time and attention, making your relationship better today than it was yesterday.